Welcome to the Planting Wildflowers podcast. I'm your host, Rebecca Leonardis. I'm an entrepreneur, wife, mom, and stepmom. I'm super interested in people and perspectives, and I love how a good conversation can leave you feeling empowered, sometimes even pique your curiosity to learn and grow. Mostly, though, I love how really listening to one another opens up limitless opportunities for that beautiful sense of connection and community that we all love. Thanks for tuning in. Let's be inspired. Today's podcast has such an awesome energy to it as I welcome an extraordinary woman, Laura Kerr, to the show. Laura is a passionate leader in her profession as a social worker. She is a yogi extraordinaire. In fact, she was my first yoga teacher. She's a mother to two great kids and a partner to Jordan. Laura is an activist and a deeply generous soul. It is an honor and a privilege to welcome you today, Laura, to the Planting Wildflowers podcast.
Thank you very much, Rebecca. That was quite the introduction.
It's absolutely all true. I wonder if you could just take a few moments and elaborate on that and just give us the lowdown. Tell us a little bit more about you, what you're all about.
Okay. Well, I guess I would have to agree that I am a very passionate individual that sometimes can come off as bossy. Many men would describe me as. but the truth is I'm also open, very open in terms of learning new things, right? I feel like as much as I often become very passionate and I can feel and believe things in every cell of my being, I also know that I'm constantly growing, right? And that there's always something for me to learn. So I feel like as much as I am vocal about my opinions, these days, you know, in my 30s, I feel like I'm trying to listen more. Listen and learn, really, because I feel like there's so much to learn, to be learned, right? There's so much we don't know. And with everything that 2020's brought us, I feel like for me, it's been the year of listening. I don't know about you, but I with every big moment that's happened this year, I've realized how much I don't know, which is exciting because how boring would it be if I knew everything? So it's been quite the year of learning. And sorry, what did you want me to elaborate on? Just myself?
Just who you are. You were going down the right road there.
It's so funny because when Rebecca asked me to give her, you know, my idea of who I am, like my mind goes in 25 different directions because, you know, one of the ways I came to explore and learn more about yoga was after I had my second child, Owen. My husband always wanted to be a parent, and being a parent wasn't something I ever knew I wanted to be. It was something I was open to, but it wasn't like, when I grow up, I'm going to be a mom. You know, I have friends like that. That was their dream. They wanted to be a mom when they grew up. For me, that wasn't my number one goal in life. I wanted to travel. I wanted to meet new people. I wanted to try different things. And so, you know, being a mom and having children was one of those things I was going to learn a lot about when diving in with my partner. And after I had my babies, I feel like as mothers, that's all anybody else sees. Once you become a mother, that is who you are, right? And I started to feel like I was losing myself. And, you know, I think a lot of other mothers can relate in that we figure out our babies quite well. And so it can be challenging to leave them with our partner or even be parenting with our partner and be kind and encouraging. Often I found myself trying to tell him how to be a dad because I had figured certain things out as a mom, right? Mm-hmm. So I realized quickly, with my little guy being maybe 2 months old, that I needed something just for me so that I could have Laura time, right? So I started attending yoga and body flow classes at the Good Life Fitness. And the really great thing about that was I could leave in the evenings when my partner was home, but I could also go during the day and leave the kids in the childcare. And it's funny how much I felt like I discovered, like how much I discovered about myself by just moving my body. Like it's wild, the tension, the grief, the postpartum depression that I held in my body that I was able to move through just by moving my body. I feel like some people might find a way to move through all this shit running or dancing or some other physical activity, cycling. And for me, it was yoga. And so I feel like I began to recognize myself again after motherhood, find the parts of me that, you know, kind of got put on the back burner that I almost forgot existed through moving my body. And it's really been one of the most life-changing experiences of my life. Just picking a class, going, you know, that's always the hardest part, is getting there that very first time. Sure. But then even with my partner, I almost had to fight to continue to do that, right? Because he had anxiety about being a dad, didn't always want me to leave. And it was very important for me to communicate that I need alone time apart from, you know, being a partner, being a mother, so that I can explore exactly who I am. And it's just amazing how body mechanics and moving and breathing can help an individual to do that. So, wow. Yeah.
Laura, you and I have been friends for a number of years. I did not know this story. I did not know that this was your evolution to yoga.
Right. And
so for me, this is really enlightening. You know, this is, first of all, I love what you said about the idea of positioning yourself and recognizing that you needed to be kind and encouraging, you know, while he was trying to figure out his thing, but also recognizing that there was something within you that was needing to be tapped back into. And the fact that you gave yourself permission to find out what that was. I think sometimes that's maybe the greatest, single biggest obstacle for a lot of women, is that they know there's something more, and yet, you know, that distraction or that obstacle remains in front of them without taking that first step. And hearing you describe what it did and continues to do for you is very beautiful and very inspiring for so many I know who would be listening, because they're on the side of that distraction that prevents them from making the first step. I love this. Thank you so much for sharing that. So, you know, I was going to get into the conversation with you about yoga. One, because that's where you and I met. I remember vividly, I've shared this with you before. I remember it was one of those days for me where it was super high stress in our house. I cannot remember what was going on, but I was intent on flying out the door and taking a yoga class. And I was so upset, because I know with yoga, you walk into the room and it's meant to be quiet right away. And I felt like I was going to bring in all this scattered, you know, energy, and I was going to have a hard time slowing myself down. And you were the only one in the waiting room, because everybody else was already lying in Shavasana waiting for the class to begin. And I remember you greeting me with such kindness and such openness. You took me on a quick tour, showed me around. And I thought, okay, I'm good. I am in good hands. I am with a loving person. I'm in the right place right now. So I am forever grateful to you for that, because that was a transformative moment. I could have very easily turned around and ran out the door because I was just feeling overwhelmed, you know? So yoga to me is always something I associate with you and your spirit. So I would love to kind of find out a little bit more about what brought you to where you are today, because you spend a lot of time bringing yoga into people's lives now. And it's all as a result of taking that first step, you know, when Owen was a baby. And we now know what drew you to yoga, but what keeps you with yoga? What allows you to evolve in that world, that yogic thinking? Tell us a little bit more about that for you.
Okay, so I had the great pleasure and privilege of being able to teach for a couple of years at a hot yoga studio. And so that meant I could teach several classes a week, sometimes several classes in a row. And really, teaching at that studio is what helped ground me as a yoga teacher. The training that I took was amazing. It was all alignment based. And the teacher that I had was all about planning out your classes, making sure that you had everything organized before you went in. So that's how I started teaching. I planned every class. I had everything organized, apex pose. It was very focused on the poses. And I quickly realized after about a year that for me, that didn't feel authentic. That didn't feel real, because I didn't know who was going to show up to my class each day, right? So as soon as I threw out the cue cards, I literally used cue cards to teach, immediately people noticed. People commented like how much more in-depth the class felt since I'd gotten rid of my cue cards. And the truth is, what happened was I began to listen and pay attention to the energy in the room before I taught the class. And I taught to the class in front of me. So that might mean I have a type A personality that wants to flow and sweat their face off. But that also might mean that I have someone in the class who's, you know, grieving over the loss of a partner and would rather lie in Shavasana for the entirety of the class and simply receive the energy of the class. So a big thing for me as a yoga teacher, because I think it was powerful for me to experience as a student, was I definitely always try to ensure that I give all of the people in front of me permission to listen to what it is that they need. In fact, I believe that often my goal as a yoga teacher is that people don't feel obligated to engage in some sort of game of Simon Says and instead go inward and tune into what it is that they need. Because I've been at retreats where I'm doing a 3-hour workshop where once I went into child's pose, I stayed there for an hour and a half. And those were some of the yoga practices that truly took me to the next level in terms of self-discovery. And so I always make sure that I take an opportunity in every class to encourage my students to listen and do what feels best for them at any given moment. So in terms of teaching yoga, I think I've continued to teach yoga because it's one of those things where I will always be a student. So I'm always learning and I learn from my students as well. And I just want to be able to share the beauty of the movement and the breath work and the soul self-discovery with as many people as I can. Because even if they come to a class and they're like, man, that woman drove me nuts, there's something for them to learn, right? if they take an opportunity and they reflect and they're like, why did she drive me so insane, right? Then they may even get a little nugget from that. And so, you know, I don't know if I'll ever stop teaching yoga. It's definitely evolved. When I was first attracted to yoga, I was attracted to the physical practice of it and loved like an Ashtanga power style yoga. I even flew around the world and trained with Baron Baptiste, a power yoga teacher. Loved it. And then a couple of years ago, took my first restorative yoga teacher training. And now that's the one that really resonates with me so deeply right now. And I find people who also need to rest and restore are currently attracted to me. So, you know, as I grow and evolve and change and learn new things, I find that I'm meeting new students, new people are presented in front of me, you know? I don't know. It's a wild ride, and it's beautiful, and it's messy, and it's so full of self-discovery. And I think that that's what keeps me practicing yoga.
I love that. I love that. Yeah. You are definitely a giver, and I can see where those who follow you are always offering you something in return. You know, that experience of exchange is definitely present in your classes, which is amazing. You mentioned breath work when you were speaking about the evolution of yoga. And I kind of want to talk about that for a minute, because this is something, you know, personally, I've spent a lot of time on this recently. And I feel like if ever there were a time for people to truly understand what tools are available to them at all times, at no cost, and with the greatest, actually, I should be cautious in saying this, it's not always easy to learn breath work, but it's always worth the experience. And I know that you are an expert. You very much focus on directing attention to breath work through the yoga practice. Can you share with us the value of learning breath work, some of the techniques that you would recommend that our audience dives into learning a little bit more about, and what it's done for you personally?
So I remember in my first yoga teacher training, trying to figure out how to do Ujjayi breath, which is also referred to as ocean sounding breath, and not getting it. I don't think I got that breath, or I didn't think I had figured it out. Like, maybe I was doing it, but I just didn't know. So I feel like the truth about breath work is I definitely don't think I'm an expert, but I am constantly exploring breath work. And I do little bits of that in each class that I teach, because the breath tells us so much about what it is that we need in any given moment. And it can be really grounding. It can breathe new life into us if we need some energy. And so I think back to me learning that ocean sounding breath. And so I do keep that in the back of my mind every time I'm teaching new students, because sometimes if I spend too much time on breath work, they might be like, I can't do this. I can't figure this out. I don't want to overwhelm anyone. So I usually stick to pretty simplistic breathing methods, but that's the beauty of breath work, is it is so simplistic. Right? Just breathing in and out through your nose and noticing what happens in your body as you do that is a powerful practice. For people who are very new to breath work, I encourage them to, the next time they're around a newborn baby, to watch them sleeping. Pay attention to what happens in their body. When a baby breathes, they breathe in through their nose and their belly rises. And when they exhale out, their belly falls. And if you just focus on that and try and re-emulate that in your own body, then you're practicing breath work. I think, you know, for various reasons, especially as a woman, one thing that I noticed when I first began exploring breath work was when I would breathe in, I would suck in my belly and exhale out and my belly would release. And as I explored that, I realized that that was really related to body image and trying to manipulate my body in a certain way over the years to appear thinner. I feel like as women, we're always trying to disappear. And so even with my breath work, I was robbing myself of the oxygen, the life-giving oxygen that I required in order to function optimally. So just paying attention to your breathing. Most of us, a lot of us, become reverse breathers as adults, where we inhale and we suck in our belly. So the first trick is to begin to notice your body and what your body does as you breathe in. Some people will only breathe into their chest, the back of their backs. You want to breathe right into your belly. So maybe together we could all take a deep breath here. As you breathe in, take your hands to your belly and try and expand your belly as you breathe that breath in. And as you exhale out, try and draw your belly button back towards your spine, assisting in the exhalation of that breath. As you inhale, breathe in. As you exhale, draw your belly button back. And so I'm not going to focus on this too much because I feel like people often get stuck in their heads. So this is something I recommend, especially if breath work seems tricky to you. When you're lying in bed, if you ever have moments where you're having difficulty falling asleep, just focus on creating that Buddha belly when you breathe in, or a baby belly when you breathe in. And as you exhale out, just gently assisting the breath back out through your nose. So I think that that can be one of the most powerful breathing exercises that you can do, is that ocean sounding breath, or sometimes in my kids' classes, I call it a baby breath, because, you know, everyone's watched a baby sleeping belly rise and fall, especially all of us paranoid mothers who wanted to ensure that the child was still alive before we went to sleep, right?
For sure.
We can learn so much from just watching these little perfect beings that haven't been tainted by societal pressures, really, because I do believe that our breath changes based on things we learn. And so when you come to yoga and you begin breathing, you're really unlearning a lot of things because you're going back to a more natural state.
Isn't that the truth? Oh my gosh. I hope as you're listening to this, let that digest for a moment. You go to yoga, you experience yoga to unlearn things. So it's not an exercise in taking more in. It's really an exercise, and we've heard this before, in letting things go.
Yes.
I love it. Laura, this idea, this visualization that you've created for us with regards to breath work, I love the example of the breathing baby, because we can all visualize this. We all, or a pet. I mean, even as your dog or your cat lies there, you could watch the same sort of thing transpire. What a beautiful way to connect with the idea of allowing yourself that life-giving oxygen like you described on a regular basis. It all boils down to breath. I was listening recently to Jay Shetty. You and I were speaking about that earlier, and he was referring to the idea that the only thing that will ever accompany you throughout your entire life, that will never leave you until your dying breath, is in fact your breath. It is the first thing with you. It is the last thing with you. You can move homes. You can find new relationships. You can do all kinds of things. And the one thing that will never leave you is in fact your breath. So nurturing it and developing a relationship with it is so vital to the overall quality of your living. And I love the way you've shared this. I think this is great. And such simplicity in the way you described it. Everyone has this tool at their disposal, which is just a phenomenal thing to even consider. Even if you don't tap into this exercise for a little bit, the idea that, you know, you've heard this, you can't unknow this now. You now know that the tool is available to you at any time. So when you're ready, you will find a quiet moment, a quiet space, and allow this tool to become something that can support you and wherever it is that you need to go. Thank you so much for that. Let's stick with yoga for a minute, because you have, I don't know how recently it's been, but I know that you, both in your yoga practice as well as your practice as a social worker, have been spending time offering yoga as a tool for supporting people in dealing with grief. And I find this a fascinating use of this tool, because so many of us, particularly this past year, have experienced grief on varying levels. And I would just love to know more about how you've integrated the idea of yoga and grief and began to offer this as a tool.
Okay. So yoga for grief is something that, it's not like it's different from any other yoga class, except for the people attending are open to exploring and moving through their grief. The truth is, Rebecca, I feel like everybody is grieving at various points throughout every single day, right? I mean, we can be grieving the loss of a loved one. We can be grieving the loss of the social connection that we previously had now due to COVID-19. We can be grieving the loss of a pet, grieving connection loss that we have possibly with a partner or a friend, grieving things that we, you know, missed out on in our childhood. And I feel like people in North American society have placed grief in a box and labeled it bad. You know, do not show anyone you are grieving, mm-hmm. right? Or do not even teach anybody how to grieve. So I was approached actually by a bereavement coordinator and said, they had said, you know, I want to offer yoga to a group of people who are here specifically because they've lost a loved one. Would you be interested in teaching it? And right away I said, of course, let's do it. And these participants truly, truly want to learn how to move through their grief, how to feel the feelings that come up for them. And as a yoga teacher, there's so many different tools that I can offer to assist someone when they're moving through all of these things. Ironically, when I started this, teaching this Yoga for Grief program, I hadn't lost a lot of loved ones in my life, like a cousin here, a grandparent there, a great grandparent there. And at first I felt a bit almost like a fraud, like, you know, who am I to teach this Yoga for Grief class? And then I told myself, well, I can give them certain tools for them to move through them. About 8 weeks into teaching Yoga for Grief, I lost my grandmother and my grandfather within 24 hours of one another. And it's ironic because I feel like I'm laughing because I can't believe how many people I've lost during this period of beginning teaching Yoga for Grief. It's almost like the universe was prepping me to be able to handle all of the harsh realities that each and every one of us move through, right?
Yes.
And so then it became almost an experience where I got to move through grief in the present while teaching classes. So then I was also exploring things that were working for me and then sharing them with them. So it really was great because it was so close, right? I was doing it right there with them. But there's so many different things that people grieve. Relationships. You know, we're living in a world where it's, I think, more difficult than ever to date. And I feel like a lot of women I know anyways speak to me about the grief that they feel about the life they thought they would have and how accepting that and grieving that and moving through that often enables them to move forward in their lives. So Yoga for Grief is something I believe every single human could participate in and learn something about themselves.
Yeah, that description, what you're describing is so, it's so powerful, and I'm positive as I'm resonating with it right now, I know others are also. Now, question for you, having participated in many of your yoga workshops and classes before, you always have this moment where you allow the yogi to sort of declare or identify what their intention is in that class. I'm curious to know, in a Yoga for Grief class, how do you prompt that? Like, what are you asking for them to tap into in a class like that? Because I understand that, you know, depending on what it is that they're grieving, it could feel extremely raw to identify the intention.
Right. So I feel like I've always had a moment where I've invited and allowed space for the individuals participating in my classes to set an intention. And then sometimes I'll give them examples. And often I'll even say, if you don't have a specific intention, maybe you're going to dedicate this yoga practice to someone in your life who needs it, or someone who's gone, no longer there. And I treat those who are grieving just like I treat everyone else. I may take more of an opportunity to explain that you may have a variety of feelings and emotions that flow through you in a class. You may get angry. You may even become annoyed or frustrated with me, and know that that's okay. But those are all little spurts of grief that you might be feeling at any given moment. And so I definitely, when setting the intention in a Yoga for Grief class, I'll make sure to highlight what my intention is for them, you know, to possibly find a bit of release, to forgive. A lot of people who've lost loved ones become angry at those loved ones for leaving, right? And then I also give them permission to not have an intention. That's okay, right? So it's not actually that much different from any other class that I teach. I think maybe the individuals participating may have a more clear intention than a regular class that I teach that isn't labeled for grief. So they might be steps ahead of the yogis that attend any of my other yoga classes.
That's an interesting comp. Yeah, most definitely. They're ready for what the practice has to offer.
Yes.
Beautiful. Beautiful. I'm, as we wrap this up, in a little bit, I still have lots more that I want to ask you about. I could talk to you forever. You'll have to come back. We'll have to do this in segments because I have so many things to chat with you about. But at the end, we'll offer the audience a way to connect with you so that they can find out a little bit more about this, because this is it's a special offering. And I know that it's accessible to so many right now, because you're not only doing what you've always done, but you're offering Zoom opportunities. And you know, while that never can quite compare with being in your presence, it offers a solution, a temporary solution, and allows access to you from a distance as well, which is, you know, it has its advantages.
Definitely.
Speaking of, you know, I'm starting to think of like the pros and cons of 2020, and there are both. While we tend to, what I've observed anyways, is we tend to dwell in some of the non-positive aspects of what the year has had to offer. But, you know, you and I chatted briefly about this earlier, about how 2020 has, it has had its optimistic moments. It has offered hope. It has offered us unique opportunities that will never, ever, I don't think, they will never, ever surface again. And I would love to know from you, someone who is, you know, very much about family, very much about nurturing a healthy life, a healthy mind and body and spirit. What has 2020 been able to offer to us?
Well, I can't speak for everyone, but for myself, it's been quite the awakening for me in my life. You know, I was teaching lots of classes as well as working as a social worker, and was very busy also trying to juggle, you know, all of the activities that were my kids were participating in. And then March hit, and the longest March break ever occurred. My live yoga classes stopped, and like rewind to maybe February, I was often meditating on the fact that I taught people about self-care and stressed restoration and releasing, and I was burning the candles at both ends. And so I felt like once, you know, March 18th hit, the universe or whatever had forced me to rest. And, you know, about a month later, people were reaching out, are you going to offer, you know, virtual classes? Can you please offer virtual classes? And at that point in my journey, I wasn't ready yet. I still needed more rest. And so I took care of all of the things that get put on the back burner when you are a you know, a social worker and someone who teaches people about self-care, often you put yourself on the back burner by accident, right? And I did all of the things that I wanted to do. I went hiking in the woods every day. I talked to my partner every day about all of the things that we needed to discuss. I did my own yoga practice, and it was very simplistic and slow and restorative. I cuddled with my kids. I watched movies with them. And I read. I read and I had almost forgotten how much I enjoyed reading and learning. And so I feel like a lot of people get caught up in all of the things that they can't do right now. But the truth is there's a laundry list of things that we can because we have the time. And I just feel like this has been such a restorative opportunity for me. And so I hope other people have been able to have a similar experience like that. And maybe they'll even reflect later on and realize that they did have that, but they weren't entirely present and aware of it. Like in terms of myself restoring, you know, to a more natural state, I've even taken the opportunity to restore things in my home, you know, paint cupboards, refinish tables. I had a bike that I didn't love, so I painted it, and then that made going for a bike ride so much more joyous.
Oh, I love it.
I don't know if parents can relate, but I feel like we paint our rooms and we make our children's rooms amazing, and our bedrooms are like the last thing that we do. Well, over during COVID, that's something that my husband and I did, is we redid our room, and I love going in there. I love being in there anymore. Whereas, you know, prior to March 18th, my room was where I threw anything I didn't want to see. And so my sleep has gotten better.
Oh, wow. What an interesting outcome. That's amazing.
Yeah. I've been able to realize the things that truly matter in my life. And while I loved my job working in social services, I love the team and my manager that I work with. My last day is December 23rd because I know that I have more to offer in different areas, and someone else can learn that job and grow within that position and get to experience, you know, the most amazing team and manager that I've ever experienced. So 2020 has brought so much good. And it's also, I think, allowed for any kind of hurt and things that need to change. It's allowed them to all bubble up to the surface so that we can see them, right? And the truth is if we don't recognize and acknowledge all of the areas where we can improve, then we can't. Right? The first step truly is acknowledging that we need to grow through it, or we need to change, right? And I feel like that's what 2020's brought, and I hope that we do not lose this momentum. I hope people don't want to jump right back into the rat race of, you know, running through everything, every single moment, wearing busy as a badge, and never really taking a moment to pause and reflect. So 2020 has been a year of reflection, restoration, and truly awakenings for me. And I hope that's other people's experience.
Yeah, I think if we take a moment and really dig through the layers of what this year is, I think all of us could agree on some level that we too have experienced that. Sometimes it's a little tricky to see because we are so accustomed to recognizing the non-positives that we fail in a lot of ways to see when something is literally a gift. And that is not to say that there hasn't been challenges this year. For sure there has been for so many people. But I love the way you have articulated this idea that it has offered us this genuine opportunity to pause. And going back to our conversation on breath work, even our breath takes a moment to pause. when the inhale goes as far as it can go, there's that moment where there is in fact a pause before we release in our exhale. And that is true. It needs to be true in all aspects of our life. Thank you very, very much for helping us identify some of those opportunities and some of those genuine positive things that have happened over the course of the year. What a year for us to transition. What a year for us to grow, to recognize, to restore, as you mentioned, and certainly to awaken to new possibilities. Now, this year, you mentioned it when we were getting familiar with you in the beginning. You talked about some of the events of this year, and there were some, I mean, it continues to unfold, of course, but some major events. I really loved watching you move through, and I know you're continuing to do this, especially with your kids, move through the opportunity to learn more on the Black Lives Matter movement. We talked before about you having strong opinions on things, that you are very passionate, but that it doesn't just sit there. You just don't allow it to bake. It is something that propels you into action. And while I know our time is limited now in this conversation, I would love, even just for a moment, for you to capture what the experience of participating in this movement, this awakening was really like, and why you chose to bring your children into this experience, because that is a really powerful thing. It was beautiful to see.
Well, I'm definitely not an expert in the area of, you know, equality among people of color with those who are white, but I do believe that white supremacy is alive and thriving. And I've read several books. I'm terrible at remembering all of the authors. I'm going to get better. But I've read several books that talk about how we need to stop categorizing racism as good or bad, because when we do that, the people who are upholding racism, anyone who is white has likely upheld it in some capacity or another. You know, as I reflect back on myself, even, I realize there's so many different ways that I have contributed to racism and white supremacy. And so I think that type of, like I said, letting go of the labels of good and bad is so important, because people so badly don't want to be bad that when we label being racist or having certain thoughts as bad, we ignore them. And then they're not brought to the surface for us to evolve or grow through, right? So in terms of, you know, George Floyd being murdered and it being captured on video in such a heinous way, it felt like, wow, you know, this has been happening for years, for decades, right? People have been shouting from the rooftops, from bridges, from in front of churches, saying this needs to stop for years. And it was like watching someone's breath being just smothered from them, their life just taken, without any regard for what the individual who was kneeling on his neck, he felt justified in what he was doing. Like, seeing that made me realize how important it was to teach my children that they need to be aware of all of the ways white supremacy is woven into every part of our lives. And so bringing their awareness to that is really great, because they tell their friends about it, right? Mm-hmm. And they talk about it, and they're having conversations, and they're discovering language and sayings that are racist, inherently racist, and they're calling, you know, they're calling adults out on it.
Amazing.
And so I feel like the first step is awareness, and I'm definitely not an expert. I think that everybody should look towards people of color who have lived and breathed the oppressive effects of living in a white supremacist society and look to them not for free information. I think we need to be reading books. I think we need to be seeking out teachers who are persons of color. I think we need to educate ourselves about the systems that are in place that may be maintaining the status quo, and then having conversations about them. It starts with a conversation. But more importantly, it starts with listening. Right?
Agreed.
I feel like all of these things can make us very uncomfortable. So I think at, you know, family gatherings when Uncle Bob, I have an Uncle Bob, says something racist, none of us respond. Well, I'm living in a day and age where now my kids respond, right? And then Uncle Bob reflects. Uncle Bob could get mad. My Uncle Bob doesn't get mad. He's like, oh, sorry, you're right. But, you know, it's just, I think people are so living unconsciously and upholding white supremacy. They don't realize it, especially if we're not having kind, loving, compassionate conversations with one another. It doesn't have to be a fight. And with that being said, in terms of people fighting to be heard, it is far easier for me as a white woman to demand the attention of my white peers than it is for someone who's a person of color. So yeah, sometimes they do need to shout. Sometimes violence does need to take place in order for anyone to take notice, right?
Yes.
So, you know, I have so much more to learn. And I really hope that people continue with the momentum of educating themselves and asking questions and purchasing books and maybe even courses from people of color who are teaching us about the many different things that we can do to grow through all of this pain and find a world where there truly is equality, because we're not living in one yet.
We're not. And, you know, I wonder, do you feel like our children will be even as I say the words, I think it's going to take a little longer, but are our children the pivot point? Will we do a good enough job with our children to inspire them to create the change necessary for equality to be something that is recognized in our society, in our world?
I hope so. I even feel like the generation just below me, the Gen Xers, I think it is. I think that a lot of them are awake. So I feel like, you know, our children, I don't know what generation they are.
What do we call them?
I don't know. What are we going to call them? I feel like they're going to live in such a different world than we do. With the availability of information, I feel like things are in their face. Like, I can't even imagine if when I was 8, I caught a glimpse of a video where a man was murdered for no other reason than the color of his skin, you know, what I might have decided to do with my life, right?
Oh, wow, that's profound. But you're absolutely right. Our children are seeing things that we couldn't even fathom at that same age.
Mm-hmm.
They're hearing things. They're even hearing conversations about the things that we're seeing.
Yeah.
That are inspiring them to think a certain way.
Yeah.
This is a topic I would love. We need to grab a cup of coffee and keep exploring this together. I love this conversation. I know our time is running short, and I keep saying that, Laura, you're going to have to come back a whole bunch of times, because your insight is very powerful and I admire it so much. I know that the very last thing that I kind of want to impart on people is this idea that we're all guided by various sources. And I'm curious to know while you have your own thoughts and your own feelings about things, those are influenced by mentors, by guides, by whomever or whatever. I would love to know who or what inspires you on your path moving forward.
I don't know. I feel like there's so many guides in my life that I can't even articulate any one in particular. That's something that I think I would have to meditate on so that I could give you a clearer picture of it. I feel like I'm tuned into things energetically. And so paying attention to the areas in which I'm supposed to flow. Oh man, I don't know. I feel like I learned from so many people. There's so many amazing people there out there that have guided me. You know, years ago, I just longed to have a mentor, just one mentor, someone that I could go to reflect on myself about. But there, what I've come to realize is that there's thousands of them that surround us. Mm-hmm. Sometimes there are people in the media that are doing amazing things. You know, AOC, the American leader or politician, she is so outspoken and verbal about, you know, finding ways to create equality in, you know, the United States, the district where she lives. And then Jagmeet Singh here in Canada, I feel like is so open and verbal and calling out shit, you know, in areas where previously you wouldn't open your mouth if you saw certain things. Like him even addressing racism in the House of Commons is something I don't think anybody ever dreamed they would see. Yoga teachers from my past, my mom, my dad, my partner, my kids are huge teachers in my life. Right. They call it like it is. Jordan and I were arguing the other day and they're like, what are you fighting about? This is silly. And I'm like, you're right. We need to sit down and have a conversation. So, you know, back to that, I always longed for a mentor. I think I've come to a place in my life where I realize I'm surrounded by thousands of people who are guiding me and reflecting. One thing, reflecting what it is that I need to reflect on. One thing I do recommend is that everybody have a therapist, somebody that they can talk to who is an objective individual who can call you out on things that maybe you need to grow through, guide you in certain directions, cheer you on. And I think that's been something that's been invaluable for me, is speaking with a therapist has allowed for me to truly see all of the different teachers in my life and learn from them and grow through them and challenged me to push myself further than I may have had I not have someone pointing out like, hey, I wonder why you're taking a back seat here, right? Beautiful. And then encouraging me to explore that.
I love it. And just to clarify, Laura, when you say that piece of advice, I think is tremendous. You're referring specifically to someone in a professional type setting, not a friend that you know,
right,
referred to as your therapist, but someone who is trained in this area, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Who doesn't love you already.
Pardon
someone,
me?
Someone who doesn't love you already. Someone who sees you, you know, each time you connect with them, sees you showing up and you can speak very, very honestly with, because you're paying them. Right? You can see whatever it is that you need to say without worrying about whether or not they're going to judge you, because you're paying them to essentially inquire further.
Right. And it's their area of expertise. It's what they have spent their life devoting to, you know, the intricacies of pulling information from people in a way that reveals what needs to be worked through. I think that is such a sound piece of advice. I love that. And thank you for sharing that with everyone. We're going to find out how to connect with you as you tell us one more piece of information. I just keep going for one more. What does it mean to live a heart-led life?
What does it mean to live a heart-led life? I think for me, I've realized that there's things that weigh heavy on me, and there's things that feel very light. And when we're living a heart-led life, I think most things feel light, even when they're difficult, because they're right, right? Mm-hmm. So live lightly. Pay attention to the things that drain your energy, and pay attention to the things that energize you, because even the difficult things that you're being led by your heart to do will energize you. So for me, just living lightly.
That's beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. Thank you so much for this conversation today, Laura. I know I've learned so much about you, things that I didn't know before. I thought I had it all together, but you know, there's always something to learn. There's so many layers to people, and conversations like this I find very inspiring and certainly motivating, because like you said, there's always something to be learned. Conversations with people and connection with people are everything. They're everything, and we can never, you know, just sort of decide that we've got it all figured out. There is always something to be moving towards in a gentle, light way, while we're observing the way it energizes us, to use your words, and definitely observing the fact that it is something that is led by the heart. So I thank you so much for your time today. Can you share with everyone how we can be in touch with you, how we can follow along on your journey, how we can maybe participate in the things that you're doing?
Well, the easiest way to connect with me probably is Instagram, and my handle is kerr.laura, so kerr.laura, laura. People can connect with me via email, laurakerryoga@gmail.com, and I'm obviously on other socials like Facebook, and you can find me via Laura Kerr Yoga. And yeah, don't be afraid to reach out. Feel free to ask questions. Get curious about how yoga, breathwork, and maybe even counseling can help you grow through whatever it is you're moving through right now.
I love it. Take the opportunity, friends. Get in touch with Laura. Follow on her journey. Find out what it is that she's doing so that you can observe or partner or become part of this life that she has created, one that is heart-led, one that is light, one that I know each of us would benefit from learning a little bit from. So Laura, thank you again from the bottom of my heart. You're such a dear friend. I love you, respect you, and can't wait till we can have another chat like this again on Planting Wildflowers. Thanks so much for joining.
I look forward to it, Rebecca. Thank you.
Well, that's a wrap for today's episode, friends. Thank you for hanging out with us here at the Planting Wildflowers podcast. We'll look forward to seeing you again real soon. And in the meantime, if you would be so kind as to rate, subscribe, and share this podcast with others, I'd be most grateful. We'll catch you again soon. Until then, take good care.